The following podcast is edited from the live Voices of Montana program, Montana's original statewide radio talk show that's heard Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. The show has been airing for more than 20 years. Contact your local radio station if you'd like to hear the program live in your area and it's currently not available. The show is also streamed live on voicesofmontana.com. I'm Tom Schultz, host of the program, inviting you to contact us with comments or show ideas. The email address is studio@voicesofmontana.com. I saw this report. The final public EPA office in the town of Libby, Montana, officially closed its doors last month. I think that marked the pseudo-ending of a 20-year journey of asbestos and vermiculite cleanup for the people of Libby, Montana. It also marked the pseudo-end of a century-long association with a mine that, well, it brought jobs, but it also produced a toxin with a deadly effect, went undiscovered for a lot of years, and possibly, most likely, covered up for years after that. Today, we're going to look back. W.R. Grace, Zonalite, the EPA, Gayla Benfield, Les Skramstad, and Libby Montana on Voices of Montana.
It's time for the fastest hour in radio from Montana for Montana, Voices of Montana with Tom Schultz. Call in today at 866-627-5483 or text a comment or question to 781-627-5483. Now, here's your host, Tom Schultz.
Thank you, Josh. I have to admit, I was floored all over again when I started looking into this. I saw a report that the EPA, the Libby Field Office, it was the public information office, that it was closing its doors, and it did close its doors in late October, and I thought, wow, that kind of closes a chapter, but this story has yet to really fully unfold when you talk about the latency period of asbestos and the disease that it causes. It can take anywhere, even up to 50 years, they say, before people discover that they've been exposed to this asbestos and it has caused them all kinds of harm. We're going to talk about that as we look at the story of Libby, Montana. But like I say, I started doing that and was floored all over again about this environmental tragedy that happened right on our watch. It's history as it unfolded on a day-to-day basis. We're going to go back to 1999 with our first guest here. A bit later on, I should say, Mark Peck is going to join us. He's a Lincoln County commissioner and a Libby native, so we'll talk about it from that perspective. But let me first welcome a fellow named David McCumber. You'll know David McCumber. He's the regional editor of Lee Newspapers in Montana. He's the editor of the Montana Standard in Butte. He's the co-author of a book called An Air That Kills that he wrote with his partner. Oh, why don't I have that in front of me here, Mr. Schneider, that uncovered this Libby story back in 1999. David was the managing editor of the Seattle Post-Intelligencer at the time, and that's the paper that broke this story. Again, it was great reporting. I know I've got it over here somewhere. Let me just welcome David right now. David, good morning. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing well, Tom. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Was it Andrew Schneider?
Andy Schneider, yeah.
Gosh, I guess the first question for me is, as I talked with you yesterday, I went back and I looked at this and I was floored all over again about what happened in Libby, Montana. You were there as part of this group that uncovered this story. Do you still get that sense? Do you get floored again from time to time?
Absolutely. I mean, every time I delve back into it, it's just I get outraged, really, is what I get all over again. I mean, it's just an unbelievable story, lots of tragedy, and it's one of those things, we call it the big lie. If you tell a lie often enough, people believe it, and especially if it's so large in scope that it would seem impossible to not be true, and that's what happened here. I mean, for years and years and years, the company kind of got away with people getting sick and getting quietly paid off enough money to die on, and you know, every time I get into it, I have the same reaction you did, Tom.
Yeah. And there's so many places to go. I'm gonna jump to the backside of it a little bit because sure. The question about so W.R. Grace, they were brought up on charges. They were acquitted. Five executives acquitted of those charges. This was in even Donald Malloy's court, and essentially there was no real proof of a conspiracy, so to speak.
A lot of evidence got tossed out in pretrial motions. It was just kind of amazing, actually. I mean, by the time the trial actually started, the government, it was unusual enough that the government basically went after a company with criminal charges. But by the time the trial started, the government had no more bullets in its gun. I mean, they just all of their evidence got excluded in pretrial.
Yeah, you had reams of documents, didn't you? That talk about those real quick.
Well, I mean, we had confidential intercompany memos. We had what they called the Alpha List, which was kind of the king document of all. It was a W.R. Grace's list of employees at Libby that showed that they tracked precisely how much asbestos, their employees, they had an estimate for each employee of how much asbestos they'd been exposed to and consumed. They had a chest X-ray program through the local hospital, which they controlled through the hospital board. And they didn't share those results with minors or their families. You know, there were no changing rooms or showers or anything at the mine. So people wore the asbestos home on their clothes. Their cars became asbestos bombs. Their wives and children got exposed. Before Libby, nobody thought that asbestos was anything but an occupational disease. In other words, in order to become sick from it, you really had to work around it. And Libby proved that that's not the case. First of all, miners' families got sick, but ultimately, because so much asbestos just was carried by the wind into the town of Libby from the mine, from the mill over the years, people with no connection. The mind got sick.
Let me inject this in, and then we'll come back after break and talk about it, because this comes from an article that you wrote, again, as the PI managing editor in 2007, at the passing of Les Skramstad. And I want to have you talk about Les, but this is what you wrote. Les told me that he loved his job at the mine. Quote, "I loved it so much that even if they told me that I was endangering my life, I would probably have stayed. But if they had told me it was killing my wife and my family, too, I would have run like hell." We'll come on back and talk with the author of a book called An Air That Kills, co-author David McCumber, here as we talk about Libby on Voices of Montana. David McCumber, our first guest here as we talk about Libby, Montana, a very distinguished journalistic career. Expands a number of decades. The number here is 4 specifically. City editor, assistant manager, editor of the San Francisco Examiner. He had worked for the Hearst Corporation. He's an author as well as the former managing editor of the Seattle Post-Intelligencer when the story about Libby broke because of his work and Andrew Schneider's work. And David and Andrew co-wrote this book, An Air That Kills. David, again, I appreciate your time here. Your thoughts on Les Skramstad and that comment, I think, that tells the story of the positive and yet very negative impacts of that zonalite mine.
Yeah, Les is very typical in the fact that when he got on the mine, he was so happy because jobs that paid that well were very, very hard to come by in Libby, Montana. And, he had a shot at making a living wage for his family, and he was pretty darn pleased about it. But it turned out tragically for him and for his wife Narita and for their children. That's the tough thing. I mean, Montanans, I don't want to necessarily stereotype anybody, but I think it's true that Montana has an above average work ethic. People understand hard work in Montana, whether it's ranching or logging or mining or what have you. And they know that work's dangerous and sometimes, work can hurt you. And so for a long time, people accepted that, some people who worked up at the mine, they got sick, but it never really went past that until finally the the numbers of people, you know, in the grocery store dragging around their green oxygen tanks just became so clear, and so many people were sickened and died. You know, we found when we went and took a look at this, we found families, you know, who had lost 4 out of 5 children and their father. You know, we found just an unbelievable, you know, toll. And Andy Schneider is a terrific reporter, and he had to dig because the words asbestos disease never appeared on a death certificate in Libby. The mine really did have control of the medical complex there. And so he had to find, he reasoned that these people, as they got sick, they would have had to see specialists. So he went to pulmonologists all over the West, and he ran right straight into HIPAA, of course. And so what he said was, if I send you the names of people who have died in Libby, can you tell me if they were your patients? And finally, the pulmonologists agreed to do that. And in that process, we ended up finding, at that time in 1999, more than 200 people who had died of asbestos-related disease from Libby, in this little tiny town. And then, you know, after the stories about that were published, the first stories in December of 1999, I'll never forget, there was a town meeting about it, the first time there'd ever been anything like that. And there were 600 people crammed into the little tiny high school gym in Libby. And people, again, with their oxygen tanks, people with tears streaming down their faces, talking about the loss of their loved ones. It was a stunning kind of moment of reckoning for the town, and just really made me realize the scope of this tragedy.
And the story's not over yet. I want to come on back after a break here, David, and talk about, you know, we have this sort of pseudo-ending to a chapter of 20 years of cleanup or 100 years of the mine, but this story will continue, and we want to make sure that there's adequate resources for, I guess, justice to be served on this. So we'll come on back, talk more about Libby, Montana here with David McCumber of the Montana Standard in just a bit. You know, we'll talk with Mark Peck here in just a little bit. He's a current Lincoln County Commissioner. The EPA, after 20 years of cleanup in Libby, Montana, have closed their field office there. More than $500 million spent, over 1 million cubic yards of contaminated soil removed as part of the cleanup. But that job's not over. It's going to continue. This asbestos infected 35 million homes across the country, and the EPA had decided that it's best to leave it there. Well, I think that's going to cause some problems because it's still there, and it's pretty deadly. David McCumber is with us, as I mentioned, the regional editor of Lee Newspapers in Montana. He's the current editor of the Montana Standard in Butte, so you'll get to read a lot of his writings out of the Montana Standard. He's the co-author, along with Andrew Schneider, who did the original reporting on Libby, of a book called An Air That Kills, and a long, distinguished career. David, again, I appreciate you being here. There's a couple of places I want to go before we conclude with your time. One of them is this. This was real journalism. The PI broke a story of tragedy, of an environmental abuse, and had it not been for you guys, who knows how long this goes unrecognized?
Well, it was kind of funny because after we did write the story, I mean, EPA in Montana is basically the state officials, basically, many of them just dismissed it. It couldn't be true. And the Region 8 administrator was actually a rancher from Wyola at the time named Bill Yellowtail. And so Yellowtail sent a crew out there to look at it just almost defensively, said, well, you know, it's probably BS, but, you know, let's send a crew out there. And they were there for, you know, the next 25 years trying to deal with it, 20 years trying to deal with it. And so, yeah, it was a story that one of the victims of the asbestos poisoning in Libby, Gayla Benefield, had tried to interest other newspapers in Montana about, but it was one of those stories, again, it's just so big and so difficult to get a grasp on, that she hadn't had any success in interesting, you know, any other media about it. And fortunately, Andy, I miss so much. He passed away a couple of years ago, but Andy was just persistent, and he's also trained in public health, and he understood the science, and so he was able to break this story.
It's a typical story, I think, of I don't know, it wouldn't necessarily, for me, it's kind of a failure of capitalism. I mean, we often point out that countries have failed in many ways, and or socialism's going to fail us. But, you know, for freedom-loving Americans, we look at Libby, Montana, and it's probably, if we're honest about it, a failure of capitalism.
Well, you know.
Or conscience.
Yeah, I guess it's to me, it's not so much the system as it is the way the system was managed. You know, they told those miners that the stuff they were inhaling was just a nuisance dust and wouldn't hurt them, even though they had an X-ray program going on and they could see the progression of the disease in their miners. You know, it's beyond a problem with capitalism. That's a problem with basically, you know, it's a moral issue.
Yeah, it is. It being a moral issue, people are willing to trade a certain amount of that. That's not necessarily where I want to go, but, yeah. But those comments that Les had said, you know, those jobs are important to us. So even though this happened in, like, you know, years ago, the mine in 1920s, W.R. Grace bought the mine in 1963, there's still people who have sensitivities. In fact, there are 200 homes, I think, in Libby right now that have refused help from the EPA.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, I think that you make an important point in that this insulation, zonalite insulation from Libby, was put in millions and millions of homes around the country, and the EPA, kind of at the last minute, decided not to issue a health advisory about it and emergency health declaration. And so the upshot of that is that it's there. If nobody ever disturbs it, it's probably fine. But the fact is that as soon as a cable installer goes in, or there's a remodel, or there's a demolition, that it just becomes hugely dangerous.
Yeah, and those homes are going to be well marked, I think. I appreciate the conversation, David, and it goes so fast. I don't know that you can really tie a bow around this thing, but what are you now, as a journalist, looking to see as they sort of close this one chapter in Libby, Montana?
Well, I mean, I think one of the encouraging things about this is that the EPA did its job in Libby. They were slow doing it, but once they discovered the scope of what was going on, they did their job, and they fought for the people of Libby to give them the cleanup that they deserved. And so in that sense, it was, you know, that's what that agency is supposed to do. And so I think that's a kind of a positive takeaway from it. But the other thing is that people are going to continue to get sick, and we just need to make sure that all of the resources that can be put against that to help those people are, you know, available.
Yeah, we're going to dig into that in great detail next when we talk with Mark Peck, sure. Current county commissioner. David, I appreciate this. I'll probably give you a call again because, for me, this is a story that happened right in front of us. I don't think there's any Montanan who doesn't remember. Like, you know, if we forget about it, though. I'm guilty of forgetting about it. But you mentioned the names, Les and Gala and W.R. Grace and it all comes to mind, and so there's a lot to learn.
Well, Tom, thanks very much for addressing the subject, and thanks for having me.
Yeah, David McCumber. You can look for that book, An Air That Kills. It's still available on Amazon. So appreciate David being here. We'll take a break and come on back with Mark Peck. Quick nod to our affiliate in Libby, KTNY 101.7 FM. I know the city is ready to move on from this, being known as the worst case of industrial poisoning of a whole community in American history. That's how the federal government related this story to Libby, Montana. And I know they're ready to move from that, but it's going to take a little bit of time. We're welcoming Mark Peck now, who's the Lincoln County Commissioner, a Libby native. You know, Mark, you and I were talking. As you said, when you search Libby, Montana, those beautiful Cabinet Mountains, don't come up. It's the story of asbestos and vermiculite. And I know that you guys are ready to move on from that, aren't you?
Well, of course we are, you know. Yeah. It's, but I appreciate David's historical perspective and the work that they did. You know, having been born and raised here, you know, my great-grandparents came here in the early 1900s with the J. Neils family. So the roots are pretty deep. And, you know, we want to move on, but we also want to... You know, it's a balance between moving on and still taking care of the issues that are still here and that are going to be ongoing, primarily the health issues that David touched on and the fact that, you know, the material's still around here. I mean, it's naturally occurring, and plus there's just areas that they didn't find that we're going to discover, and how do we deal with those? And I mean, I think we're ready to move on, but at the same token, you know, We can't forget the impacts to this community. The first time I really heard about this, I was still in the military. I did a 20-year military career, and I was actually in Virginia on military business, and a good friend of mine I grew up with is a coach at William & Mary, and we were going to get together, and I opened up my hotel room. There was a USA Today, and just ironically, here's the whole front pages about Libby, Montana. Wow. And, you know, it's just very personal. You know, when I read David's book and the names and the people that I know, you know, Bob and Carol Graham, I grew up across the road from them. I was in their home, played with their kids. I mean, these are people that you know and you care for, and the Benefields, the old Libby families that, so we're ready to move on, but, always with an eye to the impacts of it.
Yeah, that work is not done. So we'll come on back. Mark Peck is with us. We have time on the other side of this break. Lincoln County Commissioner to talk about what moving on means. The Libby Field Office closed its doors after 20 years of asbestos cleanup, but that is not the end of the story. Back with more from Montana for Montana, Voices of Montana.
Voices of Montana continues right after this.
You're listening to a podcast from the live Voices of Montana radio show. Be sure to check out the full podcast page at voicesofmontana.com for a full listing of all our programs. We've been covering Montana issues for more than 20 years. Thanks for listening today.
The fastest hour in Montana radio continues. Call 1-866-627-5483 and join Montana's statewide radio talk show, Voices of Montana, with Tom Schultz.
After 20 years, an EPA field office closes in the town of Libby. There's still work to do. We'll talk about this somewhat pseudo-ending of a 20-year journey of asbestos and vermiculite cleanup, and also talk about what is next. Mark Peck is with us here, Lincoln County Commissioner. I'm Tom Schultz. Welcome back. Two decades strong, working on three Voices of Montana. Tomorrow, it's open phones. We'll talk a little bit about the developments in the election integrity news to share, and then also a couple of articles that come out this week, even by conservative authors who had talked about this grand new party, what's in store for the Republican Party without Trump at the helm. We'll bring that up and a few other things on open phones tomorrow. Back again with Mark Peck, Lincoln County Commissioner, military career, Air Force veteran, 20 years of service. Mark, thank you for being here and thank you for your service. Let's talk about some of the numbers here. And maybe we just get right to the burning question about as the EPA closes its door, that field office anyway, and there's sort of a handoff going on here. Does this make you nervous? What are your initial thoughts about this?
I wouldn't say I'm nervous. You know, I think we're you know, I.
What challenges do you think that you'll have as a community?
Well, you know, the health issues are still the number one concern that I've got. And I think most, you know, are my counterparts and most people in town, because you guys explained very well the legacy time frame of this, you know, disease developing. And, you know, and we're starting to see, you know, possible connections to autoimmune disease that we have a much higher rate of here in Libby than most places. So, you know, ensuring that we have the ongoing health care, and, you know, we've been assured from the EPA that there's no intentions at this time of lifting the public health emergency, and you know, there's strong support from both Senator Daines and Senator Tester. So I'm not nervous about it, but we need to be vigilant on that issue. I think research is important. You know, most Superfund sites are not as complicated as Libby, and you know, it'll be a contained site. You know, and the remedy is to keep a fence around it, no building on it, or you know, those types of things. So you come back every 5 years, and if nobody's built a house on it, then the remedy is secure, and that's what the EPA is used to dealing with. And but I think here with the amount of health issues as a result of these exposures, you know, to really test and make sure that the remedy is working, you know, we need to do ongoing health surveillance to see, you know, our kids that are being born now in Libby and living here all their lives, are they still being impacted? Well, we won't know that till they're in adulthood and beyond.
Yeah.
So we need to make sure that that is still available and in place, and that we're continually learning about the health impacts.
And just to clarify,
so that's my biggest concern.
The latency of this disease can be anywhere from 20 to 50 years from some of the reports I saw. So, to the point where you have a measurable amount, or you have asbestosis, the disease. I mean, that's a long time. So one of the questions is this funding stream, because you have to manage this into perpetuity. What's your confidence in that current funding stream that will now be transferred to the DEQ, to the state of Montana?
Well, just so people understand, you know, the process is that the EPA transfers that responsibility to the state. And then on the Libby site, we have the Asbestos Resource Program, where we have three employees that are handling the on-site work. And the funding stream, you know, there's some really good things that have come out of this. And one of them, you know, David talked about the job the EPA did. You know, this is a safe place to live. And even though it's still here, if we follow the institutional controls that are in place, it can be protective. And it's as safe as anywhere on the planet to live, and that's a very good thing. The other good thing is that there's some pretty significant funding that's gone along with this, and that's not always the case. But there's about $12 million that came out of the bankruptcy settlement with W.R. Grace that's there for what we call operational maintenance. That's the ongoing operations here in Libby. DEQ got another $5 million out of that to offset their costs. Senator Vincent pushed through a bill that gave Libby $600,000 a year for 10 years, and we really appreciate the state and the assistance they gave us. I think it was unanimous votes in both houses, and we really appreciate the support that we've gotten from the state of Montana as a whole. And then there's about, we don't know the exact amount, but it's around $10 million, give or take, that's left over from the cleanup costs, I think it might have been for the first time that money usually rolls back into the EPA's budget, and with the help of Senator Daines and Senator Tester, that money is going to be held in support of the Libby project. So when all this other money's expended, there'll be another, whatever that amount is, around $10 million. So there's significant funding in place for this. And, you know, and we've just had some differences of opinion with DEQ on how to best manage that money.
What is their plan? What's the DEQ's plan right now to manage that money?
Well, the way it works right now is that they're going to, you know, the EPA sends money to the DEQ out of the $12 million to run the program, and then, you know, they fund our budget out of these funds as well. The biggest difference is between, you know, Christine Todd Whitman, the EPA director at that time, or secretary, the head of the EPA, I believe it was in 2002, said that the cost of this cleanup would not be borne by the citizens of Libby.
I remember.
You know, we take that as a promise from our government. And I think, you know, DEQ is looking at that, and they're looking at the long-term funding. And I mean, we were basically told that, well, you can't hold, you know, the current administrations accountable to somebody from three or four administrations ago. And if there wasn't adequate funding, I would agree with that. But we believe that there is adequate funding. And so there's a difference there. You know, we think that any ongoing cleanup, I think you had stated that there's over 200 homes that refuse to get cleaned up. Well, they're sitting there. They're still just as big a threat as they were when the EPA was here. And so when those change ownership and somebody wants to get those cleaned up, I think it's has been the feelings of DEQ that the homeowner should bear that. Now, they've come a ways on that and offered some flexibility, but you know, we're still not in full agreement on how that money should be best managed.
Understood.
And, I think we're both in agreement that it has to be managed extremely well, because this is it. We have to manage these funds into perpetuity.
Mark Peck with us, Lincoln County Commissioners. We'll take a look after the break here, again, continuing what's next for Libby, Montana, but also as a native of Libby, Montana, to talk about the impact of this mine on this community. And that's ahead here in just a little bit. It was 1999 when the Seattle Post-Intelligencer broke the story about Libby, Montana, and citizens there suffering from the effects of the Zonalite mine, which had been actually in production since the 1920s for a long time there. It was the source of about 80% of the world's vermiculite, and not all vermiculite contains asbestos. There's a fair portion of it that doesn't, but this did. It went into 35 million homes. There were plants across the country that had to be torn down, and Libby, Montana, of course, right at the center of it. Mark Peck is with us here, who is the county commissioner for Lincoln County, and as we're talking about here, the Libby field office has officially closed its doors after 20 years of cleanup there. Mark, again, I appreciate you being here. Talk about this whole experience as a native of Libby, Montana.
Well, it's extremely personal. I think, you know, in my opening comments, you know, I talked about, you know, these are people that are friends and family and neighbors, and so it's deeply personal.
Yeah.
You know, I really appreciated the analysis from David, you know, when you talked about Les Scramstead, and, you know, how he said he loved his job and he knew it was, you know, even if he knew everything there, he might even still keep doing it. And, you know, we're accustomed to that. Like David said, you know, we're loggers, we're miners, and those are dangerous occupations. But the difference is, you know, logging isn't dangerous when you come home. You know, you don't bring, you know, sawdust home that's going to kill your children,
yeah,
or your wife, or, you know, so that's the difference here that just makes it, you know, a whole different ball game for us. You know, as far as the EPA office closing, I mean, it's an end of an obvious era to this community that, you know, it's both bitter and sweet, I guess, would be the best way to explain it. You know, but they still have a presence here. You know, we still have the mine site that is going through, you know, the same process we went through. You know, the difference is that W.R. Grace is the responsible party up there, so the EPA's presence is they're not actually doing the cleanup. They're overseeing the cleanup that W.R. Grace will be doing. So it's still not gone. I mean, it's still here, and it will be for our lifetimes,
well,
at least.
Yeah, so. I mean, that's what's kind of still a question mark. Will there be continued testing up there? I mean, the EPA is not gone from the area. I mean,
right.
They're not just writing a check and then saying, okay, we're out of here, are they?
No. No, in fact, you know, if there's significant, you know, if we come across a significant find that, you know, nobody knew was there, you know, they're still... online to come in and help with those kind of things. But for, you know, the ongoing maintenance of the remedy that was put into place, you know, that's the state, and then our local office, it's there to help citizens if they're going to remodel, you know, if they're going to dig in their yards. Because there's very specific records on each property that was cleaned up. And, you know, so they can come back, and there's an ongoing management process in place. And, you know, and overall we're in a pretty good place from that standpoint of things. You know, there's still some disagreements between us and DEQ, but overall, you know, those management pieces are in place, and I think they're working, and they're just going to get better as we move forward.
Well, that's good news, and good news to end on there, Mark. We're going to continue looking over the town of Libby, because it's Libby, Montana, and I think every Montanan is concerned and has prayers and good thoughts for the people who may be suffering because of the asbestos there. Just thanks for catching up with us, Mark. All right, we'll talk to you down the road. Be well.
Yeah, we appreciate you keeping an eye on it.
You've been listening to Voices of Montana. Comments and opinions heard are those of the host or callers, and not necessarily those of this station, sponsors, or Northern News Network. Join us Monday through Friday at 9:06 for Voices of Montana.